It's just the way we are. So is that a yes? Yes. That must be emotionally devastating. It's not easy. Talk to me about your obsession with the lighthouse. Jenna said,
Objection. Drawing a conclusion.
Sustained. Tell us about your reasons for working so long and hard on the lighthouse, Mr. Armstrong. Jack furrowed his brow and hunched forward. It's complicated. Do your best, said Patterson politely. It was her special place, Jack said simply. That's where she'd go when she was a kid. I found some of her things there. A doll, a sign that she'd made that said, Lizzie's Lighthouse, and some other things. And when she was alive, she said she wanted to come back to the palace. I guess me going there instead and fixing it up was a way to show respect for her wishes. All right, what else? Jack smiled. Lizzie thought she could see heaven from the top of the lighthouse. Heaven? Yes, Jack said. She believed that when she was a little girl, he added quickly. But you're an adult, so you didn't believe that, or did you? Jack hesitated. Jenna glanced at the judge and saw his eyebrows rise higher the longer Jack waited to answer. No, I didn't, but Jack shook his head and stopped talking. The lawyer let this silence linger for a bit as he and the judge exchanged a glance. So you wanted to fix up the place? Yes, the stairs to the lighthouse fell in and I wanted to repair them, and the light, too. Fix the light? It's my understanding that the lighthouse in question is no longer registered as a navigational aid. It's not, but it stopped working while Lizzie was still there, so I decided to try and repair it. So let me get this straight if I can, said Patterson in a skeptical tone. You neglected your family so that you could repair a lighthouse that is no longer used as a navigational aid, solely because your wife as a child thought she could see heaven from there? Let me ask the question again. Did you think you could see heaven from there? He asked in a chiding tone. No, I didn't, said Jack firmly. We have one more video to show, Your Honor. All right. Patterson turned to Drake, who worked the controls, and the image appeared on the TV of Jack standing on the catwalk around the lighthouse, reading one of his letters to Lizzie. Could you tell us what you're doing in that picture, Mr. Armstrong? None of your business, snapped Jack, who was staring at the TV. Jenna stood.
Your Honor, relevance?
Again, state of mind, replied Patterson. Answer the question, instructed the judge. It's a letter, said Jack. A letter to whom? My wife. But your wife is deceased. I wrote the letters to her before she died. I wrote them when I was sick. I wanted her to have them after I was gone. But you can't read them now. So why were you reading them? You obviously knew what was in them. There's nothing wrong with reading old letters. I'm pretty sure people do it all the time. Perhaps, but not in the middle of the night, on top of a lighthouse, while small children are alone in the house.
Argumentative,
snapped Jenna. Sustained, said Grubbs. Jack looked at Patterson and said, I know you're trying to make it look like I'm nuts, but I'm not, and I'm not unfit to care for my children. That's for this court to decide, not you. Jack sat there for a few seconds. The walls of the courtroom seemed to be closing in on him, cutting off his oxygen. His anger, always near the surface ever since Bonnie had filed her lawsuit, now burst to the surface. He looked at Patterson. Have you ever lost anyone you loved? Patterson looked taken aback but quickly recovered. I'm asking the questions. Jack now looked directly at Bonnie. You know how much I love Lizzie. Patterson said, Mr. Armstrong, you're not allowed to do that. Jack ignored him. He stood, his eyes burning into his mother-in-law's. I would have gladly given my life so that she could have lived. You know that. Mr. Armstrong, cautioned the judge. She meant everything to me, but she died. Mr. Armstrong, sit down, snapped Grubbs as he smacked his gavel. Jack pointed a finger at Bonnie and cried out, No one feels worse than I do about what happened. No one. It is a living hell for me every day. I lost the only woman I have ever loved, the only person I wanted to share my life with, the best friend I will ever have. The tears were sliding down Jack's anguished face. The judge barked, "Bailiff!" Jack said, "The best things that Lizzie and I ever created were our kids. Our kids! So how dare you try to take away the only parent they have left just because you're mad at me? How dare you?" The bailiff forcibly removed Jack from the courtroom while Bonnie looked on, obviously shocked by his outburst. Patterson said, "Nothing further, Your Honor." He walked back to his chair, barely able to conceal his smile. The judge looked critically at Jenna. "Do you have anything to add, Counselor?" Jenna looked at the distraught kids and then at the judge.
"No, Your Honor."
The judge said, "I'll render my judgment on the motion this afternoon." Jack was released from the bailiff's custody a few minutes later. They didn't wait at the courthouse but drove back in silence to Channing. They waited in a small room at the back of the little bit. They all jumped when Jenna's cell phone buzzed. She answered the call and listened, and her expression told Jack all he needed to know.
"The judge granted the motion for temporary custody," she said.
"And it's all my fault," thought Jack. "I've lost my family again." Chapter 64. Jack sat on his bed at the palace, holding letter number 6 in his hand. He hadn't read it yet. He was thinking about other things. No matter what you do, no matter how hard you fight, life sometimes just doesn't make sense. Bonnie and representatives from social services were coming this evening to take the kids away from Jack, perhaps forever. He looked down at the letter and balled it up and threw it down on the bed next to the other 5. As he looked out the window, 3 cars pulled into the driveway of the palace, including Sheriff Tammy and his police cruiser. Though it was only 7 in the evening, the sky was as dark as midnight. A tropical storm was just off the coast, and the wind was beginning to slam the low country with a fury. That was the major reason they were coming tonight, to move the kids farther inland. Jack had put up no fight, principally because he wanted his kids to be safe. The lights kept flickering on and off in the house. Someone tapped on his door. "Yeah?" It was Jenna.
"They're here, Jack,"
she said quietly. "I know." As Jack came downstairs, he stared at the 3 packed bags standing next to the front door. Then he looked over at the kids. Corey and Mickey were on the couch crying, and Jackie, not understanding what was going on, was crying too. He clutched his monster truck in one hand and hugged his siblings with the other, his little body quaking. Liam simply stood by, not knowing what to do, his big hands clenched and unclenched in his anxiety. Jack went over to his kids and started whispering to them. "It's going to be okay. I promise. This is only temporary." Jack and Jenna both answered the door. Bonnie, Fred, and the social services people stood there with umbrellas in hand. "Are the children ready?" one of the social services folks asked Jack. He nodded, his gaze squarely on Bonnie. "Bonnie?" She looked at him, her face flushed. "Do we have to do it this way?"
"I'm only thinking of the children, Jack."
"Are you sure about that?"
"I'm very sure."
Sammy, Liam, Jackie, and Corey had joined them on the front porch. Corey said, "Grandma, please don't do this, please. We want to stay with Dad." One of the social services people, a woman, stepped in and said,
"This is not the time or place to discuss this. The judge has ruled."
She looked at Jack.
"We really want this to go smoothly, and I'm sure you do too, for the sake of the kids."
The woman glanced over her shoulder at Sheriff Tammy, who stood outside his cruiser looking very uncomfortable. Sammy eyed Jack, but it was Jenna who stepped forward and said,
"We do."
Sammy took a step back, and Jack looked at his 2 kids. "Okay, guys, you're going to be back here faster than you can say Jack Rabbit." Corey nodded, but the tears still slid down his face. Jackie looked at Corey and started to tear up again. Jack hugged both of them. "It's going to be okay," he said. "We're a family. We'll always be a family, right?" They both nodded. "We'll get your bags. Liam, go get Mickey. I'm sure you want to say goodbye to her. They need to get on the road before the storm gets any worse." Sammy and Jack carried the bags out to the car, and Jack strapped Jackie in, while Corey buckled up next to him. When Jack looked back up at the porch, he knew something was wrong. Liam was standing there, his face pale and his expression wild. Bonnie had seen this too. Despite the wind and rain, she got out of the car. "What is it?" said Jack as he ran up to Liam. "I can't find Mickey." Jack and the others raced into the house. It took only 10 minutes to search the place. His daughter was gone. A quarter mile down the beach, Mickey was stumbling along, crying hard. The wind and rain battered her, but she kept going, leaning into the gusts swarming off the ocean. She kept weaving away from the waterline as the storm pushed the Atlantic farther landward. As upset as she was, Mickey didn't see the palmetto tree toppling over until it was almost too late. At the last possible instant, she lunged out of the way, but dodging the tree carried her too close to the waterline and in the path of a huge wave that crashed over her. Mickey didn't even have time to scream before the receding wave swept her out. Chapter 65. Jack stared out at the darkened sky from the front room of the palace. The rain was coming down even harder. Liam had quickly driven home to see if Mickey had gone there, but he'd called to say she wasn't at his house. Bonnie said,
"Jack, what do we do? What do we do?"
Her voice was hysterical. Jack turned to her and said sharply, "The first thing we do is not panic." One of the social services personnel said, "We should call the police. The sheriff drove off before this happened, but I'm sure we can get him back." Jack shook his head and said in a crisp, take-charge manner, "There's only Tammy and one deputy, and they'll be preoccupied with the storm. We can call them, but we can't just sit around and wait for them to start looking for her. We have to start searching the area. We need to split up, search by street and also the beach." He pointed to Fred. "Fred, you and Bonnie drive west in your car. Go slow, look for Mickey that way." He turned to the pair from social services. "You go east in your car and do the same thing. Let's exchange cell phone numbers. Whoever finds her calls the others. Sammy and I will take opposite directions on the beach." He turned to Corey. "Cor, can you be a real big guy for me and stay here with Jackie? Go to the lower level and stay away from the windows." Corey swallowed and looked terrified at his dad. "Mickey's coming back, right?" "She absolutely is. I bet she shows up here any minute, and we need someone to be here when she does, okay?" "Okay, Dad." Jack headed right on the beach while Sammy went left. The rain was being pushed nearly sideways by the wind, and most of the sand was underwater. Jack swung his flashlight in wide arcs, but it barely penetrated the darkness. It finally caught on one object, and when Jack saw what it was, his heart thudded in his chest, and a cold dread settled over him. It was Mickey's sneaker, floating in a pool of shallow water. He looked in all directions for his daughter but could see nothing. He called out her name, but the only thing he heard in response was the scream of the wind. He raced on to check backyards and behind dunes, but found nothing. "I can't see a damn thing," he said to himself. He stared out at the angry ocean, engorged and rendered infinitely more dangerous by the strength of the storm pushing it against the coast. He turned and jogged back, his gaze toggling between land and sea. He had to bend forward to keep from being blown back by the powerful winds. Every 10 seconds he screamed out her name. Near the palace he met Sammy, who reported similar failure. Jack showed him the sneaker.
"This is not good, Jack," said Sammy.
"We're running out of time. The storm is just about to really hit."
"What do you want to do?"
"We need to be able to see a big swath of land and water."
"No way you can get a chopper with a searchlight up in these conditions."
At this remark, Jack started and looked up at the lighthouse. He turned and ran toward it, Sammy on his heels. He kicked open the lower door and took the steps two at a time. He reached the top and hoisted himself through the access door. Sammy poked his head through a few seconds later, breathing hard.
What the hell are you doing?
Getting a light.
Jack, this damn thing doesn't work.
It's gonna work tonight, because I'm gonna find my daughter, Jack shouted back at him. He ripped open his toolbox, which he'd left in the corner, snatched some wrenches, grabbed the old schematic, and began to analyze it, his gaze flitting up and down its complex drawings. While Sammy held the paper, Jack worked on section after section of the mechanism, his ability to repair it having assumed a whole new level of urgency. As Sammy watched him work, he said,
But we need a searchlight, not something that's gonna...
There's a manual feature. Jack snapped as he squeezed his body into a narrow crevice to check the wiring there. The light path can be manipulated by hand. He pulled himself out of the space and hit the power switch.
Damn it!
Jack flung his wrench down. He peered out into the darkness where his little girl was, somewhere. He involuntarily shuddered. No, I will not lose my daughter. A burst of lightning that speared the water was followed by a boom of thunder as the storm reached its peak. Footsteps came from below, and first Jenna's and then Liam's faces appeared at the opening to the room. They were both soaked through.
We've been searching the street and beach on our end, but there's no sign of Mickey,
Jenna said to Sammy as she looked at Jack's back.
We were trying to power up the light, Sammy explained, but no luck.
Sammy said,
Bonnie called, and so did the other people. They found nothing either.
He held up Mickey's soaked shoe. Jenna and Liam paled when they saw it. All three instinctively looked out to the frothing ocean. Jack remained frozen against the glass, staring out into the darkness. The electricity to the lighthouse flickered, went out, and then sputtered back on. Jack was still staring at the darkness when he saw it. At first he thought it was another bolt of lightning lancing into the water, but there was no boom of thunder following it. Yet it had been a jagged edge of current. He'd seen it. Jack suddenly realized that in that second of darkness, what he'd seen had been reflected in the glass, only to become invisible when the power came back on and the lights were restored. He whirled around and leapt toward the machinery.
Turn the light off, Sammy, he screamed.
What?
Turn it off! Off!
Sammy hit the switch, plunging them all into darkness. Jack, his chest heaving with dread because he knew this was his last chance, stared at the machinery with an intensity he didn't know he even had. He could hear nothing, not the storm, not Sammy's or Jenna's or Liam's breathing, not even his own. There was nothing else in the world, only him and this metal beast that had confounded him all summer. And if he couldn't figure it out right now, his daughter was lost to him.
Turn the lights back on.
Sammy hit the switch, and Jack saw the beautiful arc of electrical current nearly buried between two pieces of metal in a gap so narrow he didn't even know it was there. That was what had been reflected in the window. He dropped to his knees, scuttled forward, and hit the gap with his flashlight. Two wires were revealed. They were less than a centimeter apart, but not touching. Sammy, get me electrical tape and a wire nut, and then turn the main power off. Sammy grabbed the tape from the box, tossed the roll and red wire nut to Jack, and then turned off the power. While Jenna held the flashlight for him, he slid his hands in the gap, pieced the two wires together using the wire nut, and then wound tape around it. Jack stood and called out, Turn the power back on. And then hit the switch. Everyone look away from the light. Sammy turned on the power and flicked the switch. At first, nothing happened. Then, as if it was awakening from years of sleep, the light began to come on, building in energy, until with a burst of power, it came fully to life. If Jack hadn't told them to look away, they would have been blinded. The powerful beam illuminated the beach and ocean to an astonishing degree. As it started to whirl around the top of the lighthouse, Jack raced around to the back of the equipment, hit a button, and grabbed a slide lever. The light immediately stopped swirling across the landscape and became a focused beam that he could maneuver. Sammy, take control of this. Start from the north and move it slowly southward in 3-second stages. While Sammy guided the light, Liam, Jack, and Jenna stayed glued to the window, looking at the suddenly lightened nightscape. Jenna spotted her first.
There, there.
Steady on the beam, Sammy, screamed Jack. Hold right there. Jack threw himself through the opening and took the steps 3 at a time. He nearly flattened Bonnie, who was coming up the stairs.
What is...
Jack didn't bother to answer. He ran on. The light had revealed Mickey's location. She was in deep water, clinging to a piece of driftwood as 10-foot-high waves pounded her. She looked to be caught in the seesaw grip of the storm. She might have only a few minutes left to live. And so do I, thought Jack. Chapter 66. Jack Armstrong ran that night like he had never run before. Not on the football field and not even on the battlefield, when his very life depended on sheer speed. He high-stepped through 4-foot waves that were nearly up to the rocks the lighthouse was perched on. A towering breaker ripped out of the darkness and knocked him down. He struck his head on a piece of timber thrown up on the sand by the storm. Dazed, he struggled to his feet and kept slogging on. He saw the light, a pinpoint beam, but he couldn't see Mickey. Frantic, he ran toward the illumination. Mickey! Mickey! Another wave crushed him. He got back up, vomiting salt water driven deeply down his throat. He ran on, fighting rain driven so hard by turbocharged wind that it felt like the sting of a million yellow jackets. Mickey!
Daddy!
It was faint, but Jack saw the light shift to the left, and then he saw it, ahead bobbing in even deeper water. Mickey was being pulled inexorably out to sea.
Daddy! Help me!
Like a charging rhino, Jack ran headlong toward the brunt of the storm. An oncoming wave rose up far taller than he was, but he avoided most of its energy by diving under it at the last possible second. He emerged in water over his head. The normal riptide was multiplied tenfold by the power of the storm, but Jack fought through it, going under and coming up and yelling, Mickey! Each time she called back, and Jack swam with all his might toward the sound of her voice. The lightning and thunder blasted and boomed above them. A spear of lightning hit so close that Jack felt the hairs on his arms and neck stand. He snatched a breath and went under again as another foaming wave crashed down on him. He came up. Mickey! This time there was no answer. Mickey! Nothing. Michelle! A second later he heard a faint,
Daddy!
Jack redoubled his efforts. She was getting weak. It was a miracle she was still alive. If that piece of driftwood got ripped from her, it would all be over. And then he saw her. The sturdy beam of light was tethered to the teenager like a golden string. Mickey was managing to stay afloat by using the driftwood she'd snagged somehow, but there was no way she could keep that up much longer. Jack swam as hard as he could, fighting through wave after wave and cursing when one threw him off course, costing him precious seconds. But the whole time he kept his eyes on his daughter. And yet he realized that as each second passed, she was moving farther from him. It was the storm, the riptide, the wind, everything. He swam harder, but now he was 50 feet away instead of 40. He took a deep breath and slid under the water to see if he could make better time. But it was pitch dark even just below the surface, and the current was just as strong. When he came back up, he couldn't see her and cursed himself for taking his eyes off his daughter. His limbs and lungs were so heavy. Jack looked to the shore and then at the angry sky. He was being pulled out too now, and he wasn't sure he had the strength to get back in. It didn't matter. I'm not going back without her. Jack treaded water, looking in all directions as the storm bore down with all its weight on the South Carolina coast. He shook with anger and fear and loss. I'm sorry, Lizzie. I'm so sorry. What if I just stop swimming? What if I just stop? He would sink to the bottom. He looked at the shore. He could see the lights. His family, what was left of it, was there. Bonnie would raise the boys. He and Mickey would go to join Lizzie. He looked to the sky again. When a bolt of lightning speared down and lighted the sky, he thought he could see Lizzie's face, her hand reaching out, beckoning to him. He could just stop swimming right now. Right now.
Daddy!
Jack turned in the water. Mickey was barely 20 feet from him. This time the movement of the water had carried him to water. Finding a reserve of strength he didn't think he had, Jack exploded through the water. The ocean pushed back at him, throwing up wall after wall of frothing sea to keep him from her. He swam harder and harder, his arms slicing through the water as he fought every counterattack the storm threw at him. A yard, a foot, 6 inches. Every muscle Jack had was screaming in exhaustion, but he fought through the pain.
Daddy!
She reached out to him. Mickey! He lunged so hard he nearly came fully out of the water. His hand closed like a vice around her wrist, and he pulled his daughter to him. She hugged him.
I'm sorry, Daddy. I'm so sorry.
It's okay, baby. I've got you. Just lie on your back. She did so, and he put his arms under hers and kicked off toward land. Now all I've got to do is get us back, thought Jack. The problem was that when Jack tried to ride a wave in, the undertow snatched him back before he could gain traction on the shore. Then a huge wave forced them both underwater. Before Jack brought them back, coughing and half-strangled, Jack was very strong. And as a ranger, he'd swum miles in all sorts of awful conditions. But not in the middle of what was now likely a Category 1 hurricane, with someone else hanging on to him. He was caught in a pendulum, and he couldn't keep it up much longer. He might be able to get to shore by himself, but he was prepared to die with his daughter.
Jack!
He looked toward the beach. Liam and Sammy were standing there with a long coil of rope and screaming at him. Tied to the end of the rope was a red buoy. He nodded to show he understood. Sammy wound up and tossed the rope. It fell far short. He pulled it back and tried again. Closer, but still not close enough.
Sammy! He screamed. Wait until the waves push us toward the beach and then toss it!
Sammy nodded, timed it, and threw the rope. Just a few feet short now. One more time. Jack lunged for the buoy and snagged it. But a monster wave crashed down on them, and Mickey was ripped from him. He caught a mouthful of water and spit it out. As he looked down, he felt Mickey sliding past him and away from shore, out to sea. Everything was moving in slow motion, reduced to milliseconds of passing time.
No! Screamed Jack.
He shot his hand down and grabbed his daughter's hair an instant before she was past him and gone forever. Sammy and Liam pulled with all their strength on the rope. Slowly, father and daughter were pulled to shore. As soon as he hit solid earth, Jack carried Mickey well away from the pounding waves. His daughter was completely limp, her eyes closed. As Jack bent down, he could see that Mickey was also not breathing. He immediately began to perform mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. He pinched Nikki's nose and blew air into her lungs. He flipped her over and pushed against her back, trying to expand her lungs, forcing the water out. Sammy called 911 while Jack continued to frantically work on his daughter and was now doing CPR. A minute later, Jack sat up, his breaths coming in jerks. He looked down at Nikki. She wasn't moving. Her skin was instead turning blue. His daughter was dead. He'd lost her. Failed her. A crack of lightning pierced the night sky and Jack looked up, perhaps to that solitary spot his wife had tried to find all those years ago. With a sob, he screamed, "Help me, Lizzie! Help me, please!" He looked down. No more miracles left. He'd use the only one he would ever have on himself. Liam knelt next to Mickey, tears streaming down his face. He touched Mickey's hair and then put his face in his hands and sobbed. Suddenly, Jack felt a force at the back of his neck. At first he thought that Sammy was trying to pull him away from his dead child. But the force wasn't pulling. It was pushing him back to her. Jack bent down, took an enormous breath, held it, put his mouth over Mickey's, and blew with all the strength he had left in his body. As the air fell away from him and into Mickey, everything for Jack stopped, and the storm was gone. It was like he had envisioned dying to be. Quiet, peaceful, isolated, alone. As that breath rushed from him, the events of the last year also raced through his mind. And now this, Mickey, gone. Jack felt himself drifting away as though over calm water, propelled to another place he had no idea where. But he was alone. Lizzie and now Mickey were gone. He no longer wanted to live. It didn't matter anymore. There was peace, but there was also nothing else because he was alone. The water hitting him in his face brought him back. The thoughts of the past retreated, and he was once more in the present. It was still raining, but that's not what had struck him. He looked down as Mickey gave another shudder and coughed up the water that had been buried deeply in her lungs. Her eyes opened, fluttered, opened again, and stayed that way. Her pupils focused, and she saw her dad hovering above her. Mickey put out her arms, gripped her father's neck tightly.
"Daddy,"
she said in a tiny voice. Jack sank down and held her. "I'm here, baby. I'm here." Chapter 67. The ambulance took Mickey and Jack to the hospital to be checked out. Sammy followed in his van with Liam, while Jenna stayed with the boys at the palace. Jenna had made hot tea for Bonnie, who had watched Jack's heroic rescue of his daughter from the top of the lighthouse. Now she just sat small and stooped on the edge of the couch, a sob escaping her lips every few seconds. Jenna had tried to comfort her, while Fred just sat in another chair and stared at his hands. When Sammy called from the hospital and told them they would be home shortly and that everyone was okay, Jenna had finally broken down and wept. Afterward, Jenna had ventured into Jack's room. She wasn't sure why. As her gaze swept the space, it settled on the letters, which were still lying on the bed. She went over, sat down, picked them up, and started reading. She emerged from the room 10 minutes later, her eyes red with fresh tears. She walked over to Bonnie and tapped her gently on the shoulder. When Bonnie looked up, Jenna said,
"I think you need to read these, Mrs. O'Toole."
Bonnie looked confused, but she accepted the letters from Jenna, slipped on her reading glasses, and unfolded the first one. The storm, its fury rapidly spent after fully hitting land, had largely passed by the time they returned from the hospital. An exhausted Mickey was laid in her bed with Corey and Liam watching over her like guardian angels, counting each one of her breaths. Jack told everyone that Mickey had suffered no permanent damage and should be as good as new.
"The doctor said she was one strong lady," added Sammy.
"Like her mother," said Jack, as he looked at Bonnie. He passed through the house and went outside and up to the top of the lighthouse. He stared out now at the clearing sky, the sun coming up in the east. He bent down and saw the wires he had spliced the night before. It was a miracle that he had finally spotted the trouble that had befuddled him for so long. Yet a miracle, thought Jack, was somehow what he, however irrationally, had been counting on. He leaned against the wall of glass and stared out at what looked to be the start of a beautiful late summer day. He turned when he heard her. Bonnie, wheezing slightly, appeared at the opening for the room. He helped her through, and they stood side by side looking at each other.
Thank God for what you did last night, Jack.
Jack turned and looked back out the window. It was Lizzie, you know.
What?
Bonnie moved even closer to him. Jack said, I'd given up. Mickey was dead. I didn't have any breath left. She was dead, Bonnie. And I asked Lizzie to help me. He turned to her. I looked up to the sky and I asked Lizzie to help me. A sob broke from his throat. And she did. She did. She saved Mickey, not me. Bonnie nodded slowly.
It was both of you, Jack. You and Lizzie. The match made in heaven. Two people meant for each other if ever there was.
He stared at her, surprised by the woman's blunt words. From her pocket, she drew out the letters.
I think these belong to you.
She handed them back to him and reached out and touched his face.
Sometimes people can't see what's right in front of them, Jack. It's strange how that works, how often it happens, and how often it hurts people we're supposed to love.
She paused.
I do love you, son. I guess I always have. And one thing I know for certain is that you loved my daughter. And she loved you. That should have been enough for me.
She paused again.
And now it is.
They exchanged a hug and she turned to go. Bonnie? She looked back. The kids? He said in a small voice.
They're right where they should be, Jack. With their father.
Chapter 68. When Mickey opened her eyes, the first thing she saw was her dad. Right after that, she saw Liam, peering anxiously over Jack's shoulder.
I'm really okay, guys,
she said a little groggily. Jack smiled and looked at Liam. Give us a minute, will you? Liam nodded, flashed Mickey a reassuring grin, and left the room. Jack gripped her hand, and she squeezed back. Mickey said,
sorry for all the excitement I caused. It was really dumb.
Yes, it was, he agreed. But we were all under a lot of pressure.
So the lighthouse finally worked?
He let out a long breath. Yeah, if it hadn't. His voice trailed off, and father and daughter started to weep together, each clutching the other, their bodies shaking with the strain. Can't believe how close I came to losing you, baby.
I know, Dad. I know.
She said in a hushed voice. They finally drew apart.
So what now? We still go with Grandma?
No, you're staying right here with me. Mickey screamed with joy and hugged him again.
Does Liam know?
She said excitedly. No, I thought I'd leave that to you. He rose. I'll go get him. As he turned, she said,
Dad?
Yeah?
No matter what happens in my life, you'll always be my hero.
He bent down and touched her cheek. Thanks, Michelle. Later, as he stood by the doorway watching the two teens excitedly talking and hugging, Jack first smiled, then teared up, and then smiled again. She was clearly not a little girl anymore. And Jack could easily see how fast her life and his would change in the next few years. Later, as Jack walked along the beach, a voice called out,
I'm going to miss you, Armstrongs, when you go back to Ohio.
He turned to see Jenna walking toward him. No, you won't, said Jack, because we're staying right here. She drew next to him.
Are you sure?
He smiled. No, but we're still staying. She slipped an arm around him.
I'm glad things have worked out.
I couldn't have done it without you.
You're way too generous with your praise.
Seriously, Jenna, you helped in a lot of ways, a lot.
So what are we going to do about the budding romance?
What? He said in a startled voice.
Between our kids.
Oh. She laughed and he grinned sheepishly. I think we take it one day at a time. He looked directly at her. Does that sound okay, Jenna?
That sounds very okay, Jack.
Epilogue. A little over 2 years later, Jack sat on the beach in almost the exact spot he and Mickey had occupied the night he'd realized he had so much to live for. The house was quieter now. Mickey and Liam had just left for college. She'd aced her last 2 years in high school and gone out to Berkeley on a scholarship. Liam, the drummer, had cut off his hair and was at West Point. Though they were a continent apart, the two remained the best of friends. Corey was working part-time at the Playhouse and learning the ropes of theater management from Ned Parker. Jackie had started talking full blast one morning about a year ago and had never stopped since. Although Jack noted with some measure of fatherly pride, his favorite toy was still the monster truck. He got up and made his way to the top of the lighthouse. He hadn't been up here since the morning after almost losing Mickey. He stepped out onto the catwalk and looked toward the sea. His eyes gravitated to the spot where father and daughter had fought so hard for their lives. Then he looked away and up to a clear blue summer sky. Lizzie's lighthouse. It worked when I needed it to. Jack had two very important things to do today, and the first one was waiting for him down the beach. He left the lighthouse and set off along the sand. His hands rode in his pockets. The words he would say slipped through his mind. As he drew closer, Jack realized that he had just traveled over a half mile by beach and a lifetime by every other measure. She was there waiting for him by prearrangement. He slipped his arms around Jenna and kissed her. And much like he had done 2 decades before, Jack knelt down and asked a woman he loved if she would do him the honor of becoming his wife. Jenna cried and allowed him to slip the ring over her shaky finger. After that, they held each other for a long time on that South Carolina beach as a gentle breeze rippled across them. "Sammy's going to be the best man," Jack said.
"And Liam will be giving me away,"
Jenna replied.
"I love you, Jack."
"I love you too, Jenna." They kissed again and visited for a while, discussing plans. Then Jack walked back to the palace. His pace this way was not quite as brisk. The distance seemed a lot longer going back. There was a reason for this. The first trek had been to create a bridge for his future. This trip involved him making a painful separation from the past. He reached the beach in front of his house and sat down in the sand. He pulled out a photo of Lizzie and held it in front of him. It was still nearly impossible for him to believe that she had been gone nearly 3 years. It just couldn't be. But it was. He traced the curve of her smile with his finger while he stared into those beautiful green eyes that he always believed would be the last thing he would see in life before passing on. While Jack had just asked another woman to marry him, and this seemed fitting and right in so many ways, he knew that a significant part of him would always love Lizzie, and that this too was fitting and right in so many ways. Bonnie had been correct about that. Lizzie and Jack had been meant to be together forever, if ever two people were. Only sometimes life doesn't match what should be. It just is, and people have to accept it, no matter how hard it may be. You should respect the past. You should never forget the past. But you can't live there. And now he had something else to finish, something very important. From his windbreaker, he pulled out a single piece of paper and a pen. His hand shaking slightly, and the tears already sliding down his face, Jack Armstrong touched the pen to the paper and began to write. "Dear Lizzie, a lot has happened that I need to tell you about." An hour later, he finished the letter with, "As always, love, Jack." He sat there for a while, allowing the sun and breeze to dry his tears, because for some reason he did not want to wipe them away by hand. He folded the letter carefully and placed it in an envelope marked with the number 7. He put the envelope and the photo of Lizzie in his pocket and walked toward the house. When he reached the grass, he turned and looked upward. His mouth eased to a smile when he realized what he was looking at. Today, he finally found it, after all this time searching. Right there was the little piece of the sky that contained heaven. He somehow knew this for certain. Ironically, like so many complexities in life, the answer had been right in front of him the whole time. Pop, pop! He turned to see Jackie flying toward him. The boy gave a leap, and Jack caught him in midair. Hey, buddy, what are you doing? Jack started to say something and then stopped. He turned so that they were both looking out toward the ocean. He pointed to the sky. Mommy's up there watching us, Jackie. Jackie looked awestruck. Mommy? Jack nodded. Jackie waved to the sky. Hi, Mom! He blew her a kiss. Then Jack turned back around and carried his son toward the house. Right before he got there, he slowly looked back at that little patch of blue sky. Goodbye, Lizzie. For now. The letters. Dear Lizzie, there are things I want to say to you that I just don't have the breath for anymore. That's why I've decided to write you these letters. I want you to have them after I'm gone. They're not meant to be sad, just my chance to talk to you one more time. When I was healthy, you made me happier than any person has a right to be. When I was half a world away, I knew that I was looking at the same sky you were, thinking of the same things you were, wanting to be with you, and looking forward to when I could be. You gave me 3 beautiful children, which is a greater gift than I deserved. I tell you this, though you already know it, because sometimes people don't talk about these things enough. I want you to know that if I could have stayed with you, I would have. I fought as hard as I could. I will never understand why I had to be taken from you so soon, but I have accepted it. Yet I want you to know that there is nothing more important to me than you. I loved you from the moment I saw you, and the happiest day of my life was when you agreed to share your life with mine. I promised that I would always be there for you. And my love for you is so strong that even though I won't be there physically, I will be there in every other way. I will watch over you. I will be there if you need to talk. I will never stop loving you. Not even death is powerful enough to overcome my feelings for you. My love for you, Lizzie, is stronger than anything. Love, Jack. Dear Lizzie, Christmas will be here in 5 days, and I promise that I will make it. I've never broken a promise to you, and I never will. It's hard to say goodbye, but sometimes you have to do things you don't want to do. Jackie came to see me a little while ago, and we talked. Well, he talked in Jackie language, and I listened. I like to listen to him because I know one day, very soon, I won't be able to. He's growing up so fast, and I know he probably won't remember his dad, but I know I will live on in your memories. Tell him his dad loved him and wanted the best for him, and I wish I could have thrown the football to him and watched him play baseball. I know he will have a great life. Corey is a special little boy. He has your sensitivity, your compassion. I know what's happening to me is probably affecting him the most of all the kids. He came and got into bed with me last night. He asked me if it hurt very much. I told him it didn't. He told me to say hello to God when I saw him, and I promised that I would. And Mickey. Mickey is the most complicated of all. Not a little girl anymore, but not yet an adult either. She is a good kid, though I know you've had your moments with her. She is smart and caring, and she loves her brothers. She loves you, though she sometimes doesn't like to show it. My greatest regret with my daughter is letting her grow away from me. It was my fault, not hers. I see that clearly now. I only wish I had seen it that clearly while I still had a chance to do something about it. After I'm gone, please tell her the first time I ever saw her, when I got back from Afghanistan and was still in uniform, there was no prouder father who ever lived. Looking down at her tiny face, I felt the purest joy a human could possibly feel. And I wanted to protect her and never let anything bad ever happen to her. Life doesn't work that way, of course. But tell her that her dad was her biggest fan, and that whatever she does in life, I will always be her biggest fan. Love, Jack.
My life on Earth is over, of course, or else you wouldn't be reading this letter. But I had a fine old run, did everything I wanted to do, and hell, the things that might have got left out I didn't need anyway. I'd never seen a little girl who loved the ocean and sand more than Lizzie. And she loved this old house, even though, as you know, it carries some bad memories. And Lizzie's lighthouse, as she called it. That child was always up there. I think Mickey, Corey, and dear Jackie will love this place too. At least that's my hope. And I feel sure that you, Jack, will find some comfort and peace in the place where Lizzie grew up. I know it has been a most difficult and heartbreaking time for you. I know that you loved Lizzie more than anyone could. And she loved you just as much back. Fate dealt you a terrible hand by separating you too long before you should have been. But remember that every day you wake up to those three darling children, you are waking up to the most precious things that you and Lizzie ever made together. Because of that, you will never be apart from the woman you love. That may not seem like nearly enough right now, when you want to be with her so badly. But as time goes by, you will realize that it will actually make all the difference in the world. It's not so much that time heals all wounds, honey, as it is that the passage of the years lets us make peace with our grief in our way. I know they called you the miracle man after you got better, but just so you know, I considered you a miracle from the moment you came into Lizzie's life, and I know she felt the same way. You got a second chance of sorts, son. So you live your life good and well. And Lizzie will be waiting for you when your time is run, too. And I'll probably come by for a cup of coffee myself. Until then, keep hugging those precious children and take care of yourself. Love, Cecilia.
Dear Lizzie, Christmas is 5 days away, and it's a good time to reflect on life, your life. This will be hard. Hard for me to write and hard for you to read, but it needs to be said. You're young, and you have many years ahead of you. Corey and Jackie will be with you for many more years, and even Mickey will benefit. I'm talking about you finding someone else, Lizzie. I know you won't want to at first. You'll even feel guilty about thinking about another man in your life. But Lizzie, it has to be that way. I cannot allow you to go through the rest of your life alone. It's not fair to you. And it has nothing to do with the love we have for each other. It will not change that at all. It can't. Our love is too strong. It will last forever. But there are many kinds of love, and people have the capacity to love many different people. You are a wonderful person, Lizzie. And you can make someone else's life wonderful. Love is to be shared, not hidden, not hoarded. And you have much love to share. It doesn't mean you love me any less, and I certainly could never love you more than I already do. But in your heart, you will find more love for someone else. and you will make him happy. And he will make you happy. And Jackie especially will have a father to help him grow into a good man. Our son deserves that. Believe me, Lizzie, if it could be any other way, I would make it so. But you have to deal with life as it comes, and I'm trying my best to do just that. I love you too much to accept anything less than your complete and total happiness. Love, Jack. Dear Lizzie, Christmas is almost here, and I promise that I will make it. It will be a great day. Seeing the kids' faces when they open their presents will be better for me than all the medications in the world. I know this has been hard on everyone, especially you and the kids. But I know that your mom and dad have really been a tremendous help to you. I've never gotten to know them as well as I would have liked. Sometimes I feel that your mom thinks you might have married someone better suited to you, more successful. But I know deep down that she cares about me, and I know she loves you and the kids with all her heart. It is a blessing to have someone like that to support you. My father died, as you know, when I was still just a kid, and you know about my mom. But your parents have always been there for me, especially Bonnie. And in many ways, I see her as more of a mom to me than my own mother. It's action, not words, that really counts. That's what it really means to love someone. Please tell them that I always had the greatest respect for her and Fred. They are good people. And I hope that one day she will feel that I was a good father who tried to do the right thing, and that maybe I was worthy of you. Love, Jack. Dear Lizzie, as I've watched things from my bed, I have a confession to make to you and an apology. I haven't been a very good husband or father. Half our marriage I was fighting a war, and the other half I was working too hard. I heard once that no one would like to have on their tombstone that they wished they'd spent more time at work. I guess I fall into that category, but it's too late for me to change now. I had my chance. When I see the kids coming and going, I realize how much I missed. Mickey already has grown up with her own life. Corey is complex and quiet. Even Jackie has his own personality. And I missed most of it. My greatest regret in life will be leaving you long before I should. My second greatest regret is not being more involved in my children's lives. I guess I thought I would have more time to make up for it, but that's not really an excuse. It's sad when you realize the most important things in life too late to do anything about them. They say Christmas is the season of second chances. My hope is to make these last few days my second chance to do the right thing for the people that I love the most. Love, Jack. Dear Lizzie, a lot has happened that I need to tell you about. Love, Jack. Acknowledgements. To Michelle, for taking the journey with me. To Mitch Hoffman, for readily jumping in with both feet on something so different. To David Young and Jamie Rabb, for allowing me to stretch. To Emmy Battaglia, Jennifer Romanello, Chris Barba, Karen Torres, Tom Masiag, Maya Thomas, Martha Otis, Anthony Goff, Michelle McGonigal, and Kim Hoffman, and all others at Grand Central for their unparalleled support. To Aaron and Arlene Priest, Lucy Child, Lisa Urbach-Vance, Nicole James, Francis Jolet Miller, and John Richman, for carrying the laboring oar so much. To Maria Rhett, Trisha Jackson, and Katie James at Pan Macmillan, for so successfully building my career across the waters. To Eileen Chetty for a superb copy editing job. To Grace McQuaid and Lynn Goldberg for doing what you do so damn well. To Lynette and Natasha for keeping the home fires well lit and burning robustly. This has been an Hachette audio production of One Summer, written by David Baldacci, read by Ron McLarty with Orla Cassidy. Executive producer, Michelle McGonigal. Produced and directed by Scott Sherritt. Recorded by Tommy Herron. Post-production by Danny Meltzer. Original music by Freddie Caw. One Summer is also available in print and as an ebook from Grand Central Publishing, a division of Hachette Book Group. Text copyright 2011 by Columbus Rose Limited. Audio production copyright 2011 Hachette Audio, all rights reserved. Except as permitted under the U.S. Copyright Act of 1976, no part of this publication may be reproduced, distributed, or transmitted in any form or by any means, or stored in a database or retrieval system without the written permission of the publisher. This audiobook is a work of fiction. Names, characters, places, and incidents are either the product of the author's imagination or are used fictitiously. And any resemblance to actual persons, living or dead, events or locales, is entirely coincidental.